Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We're excited to welcome back to the show media personality N. Legasse Dowson talking about what news topics are trending around the world. Social media expert Patrick Charles is back letting us know why bands and artists have to start seeing their fans as customers. Author Debbie Phillips stops in to talk about how women can shake off old attitudes about their goals and ambitions and become women on fire. We also welcome Canadian pop band 11 Past One chatting about their career and upcoming new album.
Capture your need for sound.
We are thrilled to welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show after a long absence our one of our favorite people, media personality N. Legasse Dowson. And thank you so much for joining us on the show again.
Oh, geez, it's a pleasure.
So we have a lot of things to cover with regards to what's going on in the world. I wanted to start off, though, with a situation that's going on here in Canada. We have a lot of listeners right now that are listening from overseas, but obviously I'm sure they've heard of some of the crazy that is going on. We are going to get to Rob Ford, but I did want to speak about the Senate situation that's been going on, and that's been making, you know, a splash all over the place. So with regards to what's been going on with Pamela Wallin, Mike Duffy, and Patrick Brazeau, has the right decision been made with regards to them?
Well, I think it's hard to say, you know, there's a number of decisions that were made with regard to them. I think what's happened, my sense is that these three were brought into the Senate by the Conservative government, by Stephen Harper, who appoints these guys, these people to the Senate, to get sort of raise the profile, to raise money for the party, to go on speaking tours, to make the Conservative caucus in the Senate more representative, because Patrick Brazeau, of course, is a First Nations guy, kind of a controversial First Nations guy because he was on the outside of most of the mainstream First Nations organizations. And Mike Duffy, the Duffster, as he's known, is obviously a big star from CTV, from being a news person and an anchor, and prior to that, the CBC. And Pamela Wallin, same thing. So I think they were hoping that especially Wallin and Duffy were going to raise lots of money for them, make them look good, and be good for the profile of the party. But it turns out that they got, specifically, Duffy was caught out in terms of his expenses, his travel expenses. Somebody leaked to the media that he probably didn't reside in the very modest cottage that he owns in PEI, because he's supposed to represent PEI in the Senate. So then a lot of questions started getting asked about where he did live and why he was charging his travel expenses to the Senate, to the taxpayers of Canada. And just a second, you know, wait a minute, if he's not the only one, what about Pamela Wallin? And then Patrick Brazeau got into trouble with the law. So what the Senate decided, what the Conservative government decided to do was to suspend them, expel them from the Senate. And some people are saying, just a minute here, there are big problems with the residency requirements of the Senate. There are big problems with the travel expenses of not just these three, but in general, all senators, because the guidelines are not clear. Deloitte did a sort of an investigation into it and basically said, the rules aren't clear. That's what Duffy has been saying. So for some people, it looks like these three got thrown under the bus. They were sacrificed to try and save face for the Senate. And what's happened is calls that have always existed have been sort of renewed for the abolition of the Senate.
And do you think that this is something that could actually happen now because of this crazy mess that's been going on for several months?
Well, it certainly has focused a lot of people's minds. A lot of people don't like the Senate. They don't like the idea that it's supposed to be the Canadian version of the House of Lords. You know, why do we need a second chamber of friends of the government in power? Because most of the people who get named to the Senate are highly partisan, usually friends of the government. The Liberals before them and the Conservatives now have never named anybody from the NDP to the Senate. So it's, you know, friends of the party. Once in a while, somebody like Brian Mulroney will name somebody from the Liberal Party, even though he was a Conservative. But generally, it's friends of the party, bagman fundraisers. It's a kind of not a well-loved institution from the point of view of the Canadian voter. And it's interesting, Ireland just had a referendum about getting rid of their second chamber, or their equivalent to the Senate. And it was a narrow, narrow result, and they decided to keep it. But Quebec actually had a Senate-like body for the longest time, and in 1968 basically abolished it and paid everybody off and got rid of it. So these kinds of parallel houses are not very popular. The Conservatives have asked the Supreme Court of Canada for an opinion as to what exactly they could do. Could they reform it just by fiat, just do it, or do they need what many people assume is the formula that applies to making any changes to government, which is the approval of 7 provinces representing 50% of the country, which, you know, on the face of it doesn't sound so bad, but might be very difficult to actually pull off. So the Conservatives ran on a campaign of either reforming or getting rid of the Senate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically what they've done is packed it with their friends. So they're caught between a rock and a hard place on this one. And I think a lot of people are just looking at the Senate and thinking, geez, you know, do we really need that thing? They are basically a rubber stamp. They almost never challenge anything that comes out of the House of Commons. And it's just like a nice place to send your friends for $130,000 a year.
Wow. It's nuts.
You're waiting for your appointment, aren't you?
Yeah,
guys?
I'm waiting. Now that's my next goal in life. and I was wondering, did they make a mistake by putting specifically Wallen and Duffy under the bus? Because these are media people. Like, they know what they're doing.
Well, Duffy, interestingly, has been keeping track. He documented himself quite well. And also, he's a pretty ferocious street fighter. Once he got knocked down, he basically didn't stay down, right? I think they were hoping he'd just go away and be quiet. And I don't think he's intending on doing that anytime soon. So I think he wants to bring some of them down with him. So I think maybe they did make a mistake in assuming that this was going to, he was going to go quietly. And it'll be interesting to hear what happens when Nigel Wright goes public, because he's the guy who gave Duffy the $90,000 that was supposed to save the day. And I don't know if Nigel Wright isn't just a little bit angry about some of the things that have been said about him. And, you know, this former right-hand man of the Prime Minister. So we'll see where this is all going to go. But all to say, the Senate is not a very, it's not in good order right now.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is media personality Anne Lagasse Dowson. You can follow her on Twitter at A Lagasse Dowson. Moving on and to the situation that has just blown up all over the place and specifically made us a laughingstock of our friends to the south, Rob Ford. Obviously, it's like you never know what's going to happen day to day with this guy. I guess the first question I have, there's lots of questions, but the first one would be, considering all that's happened and the fact that so many of his powers have actually been stripped, why do you think he's not calling it a day?
I think he's like a kind of a pathological narcissist, this guy. He thinks that he's right. I think he really does think that, and he's got his brother with him. You notice these two guys never really appear solo, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
wherever Rob Ford goes, so does Doug. You know, they're kind of like the evil Doug and Bob McKenzie or something, right? They are guys who grew up in Etobicoke. Their dad was a minister in the Mike Harris government and a very successful businessman. So the Ford brothers are quite well off. They inherited money from their dad's. They basically run their dad's business. And I think they're thinking, okay, we're just gonna tough it out. We're going to try and clean up our act, and we're going to run again, and we're going to see if we can't get ourselves elected by appealing to a certain sort of angry, frustrated demographic in suburban Toronto that doesn't like the sort of bicycle-riding kind of intellectuals that seem to live in the 416. So it's a kind of a 905 versus 416. The guy who calls himself the little guy, who says he's going to stick up for the little guy, versus the big bad media and the so-called elites, right? So he's playing this very cleverly, but I don't know how far he can really go with this thing, because he's got, now they've released dozens and dozens of pages of phone records, of phone calls to his buddy Leezy, who has been charged with various forms of criminal activity. Even his trainer, I don't know if you saw this, he supposedly tried to clean up his act by getting fit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's been going to the gym. His fitness trainer is a guy who was found guilty of trafficking in steroids. I don't know. It just goes on and on, you know. It's just unbelievable. It's like an episode of the Jerry Springer show.
Yeah, I would say. And what's your take on the fact that he still has, you know, some support? Obviously, there's a lot of people that want him out of there. They're disgraced. They feel it's a huge embarrassment to the city of Toronto. Do you think he can actually win their support and run again and maybe win?
You know, a lot of... Yeah, I think it's possible. Incredible as that may seem, I think it is possible. If he can get the sort of angry, contingent of people who don't like the city, who are having a hard time, who sort of buy into this line that he carries, that he's sticking up for the little guy. He's kind of a right-wing populist,
mm-hmm.
So it isn't impossible that he could get himself reelected. He's also extremely good at manipulating public opinion. You know, like he gets himself onto the front page of the papers and. he seems to be talking frankly about his problems and sort of putting himself forward as a regular guy. But I mean, the guy has procured and consumed crack. He has driven drunk. You know, like how could this guy really be mayor? It's hard to figure out. But he's a very good PR guy. I don't know. It's a fascinating sort of sociological study to watch this guy.
Mm-hmm. And one question I had that I really wanted your opinion on, I watched a bit of the situation going on when they were making decisions in the council to strip some of his powers. And I had two thoughts on the situation and wanted yours. On one stance, you could say, you know, it's good that the councillors are trying to take care of the city and are trying to, you know, maybe take some of these powers away and get things back rolling again. But then when I was listening to some of these councillors speak, I actually felt like it was more of a political move. Like, I didn't feel like they really were doing this for the benefit of Torontonians. It was like, let me get my digs in now and see if I can advance.
Well, I'm sure they all have their own ambitions, right? And suddenly the mayor's seat is sort of half full or half empty, depending on how you view it. So I'm sure there's lots of jockeying for power. I mean, Toronto is the metropolis of Canada. It is the biggest city, arguably still the most important city, although a lot of the money has moved to Calgary and westward. So, you know, it's a bizarre situation. Meanwhile, the city's just sort of chugging along. The services are being delivered. I mean, I don't think Rob Ford has been doing his job as mayor at all, even prior to this thing blowing up. You know, I think that there are lots of people who are actually watching him and just waiting for him to shoot himself in the foot terminally so they can become mayor. I'm sure that's true. But what this guy has done is he is mining sort of the frustration and anger, if not outright rage, of a lot of people at the difficulties they're facing in the post-2008 economy, right? After the economy tanked and Wall Street almost was on its knees. People are having a hard time in Toronto. Housing is ridiculously expensive. The highway, the Don Valley Parkway is completely congested. Life is difficult for people. And so the kinds of words and vocabulary that Rob Ford uses appeals to certain people, and it's kind of it is possible that he could be returned to power, and these ambitious councillors who are sort of in it for themselves and who supported him for the longest time, even helped to create Rob Ford, have now turned on him and stabbed him in the back, if you wanted to say it that way.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, our good friend and media personality, Anne Lagasse Dowson. Follow her on Twitter, @AlagasseDowson. I wanted to move on to a thing that's been in the news for a while, and it continues to be that way, which is the spying situation, the NSA. There's recent claims now that Brazil says that Canada has been spying on them. And, you know, what do you take away from this? Because now Australia's into it as well. Indonesia's upset with them because they're saying Australia's spying on them. It's like it's not stopping.
No, and I think what's happened now is guys like Edward Snowden and Julian Assange have, you know, sort of blown the lid off all the kind of surveillance activities that are underway and various governments are running against their citizenry, but also against people in prominent positions, right? Like it turns out that the U.S. has been listening to Angela Merkel's cell phone. I mean, you know, we live increasingly in potentially a surveillance society. And so I personally, as a person who's in favor of freedom of expression, find this disturbing. I think a guy like Snowden or a guy like Assange, annoying and maybe even weird as they may be, have done a big public service by letting us know about what's going on. And I think we should all be thinking about that. Is that really what you want your tax dollars to be spent on? Listening to Angela Merkel's personal calls?
Mm-hmm.
Spying on supposed allies in Brazil, like, I don't know. It seems to me it's something we should all be questioning and thinking about, because I don't think it's a good expenditure of energy or money. I would like to see, you know, better surveillance of potential criminal activity, terrorist activity. I don't see what's to be gained by going after these people in general. And I think some of these cables that were released by the WikiLeaks people, they really give you pause, because it seems to me some of the people who are supposed to be guarding our interests go too far.
Before I let you go, I always have to ask you about some pop culture item that's going on, and thought this was pretty interesting. Madonna has actually just been listed as the number one, or at the top of the list of Forbes magazine's list of annual top musicians. And she actually brought in $125 million between June of 2012 and June of 2013, way outpacing her second, you know, competitor in second place, which is Lady Gaga, who brought in $80 million. So a huge sort of jump between first and second place. a lot of people, I think, Anne, that, you know, Madonna is, you know, she's in her mid-50s, she's going to become irrelevant, but look at her go.
But absolutely. She's way ahead of Justin Bieber.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. I know, and Bruce Springsteen, too. I love Springsteen. Not so much Justin Bieber. I think maybe the secret to her success is that her cohort, like her demographic, has followed her, right? She's been in the business now, I don't know, even 20, 30 years, and people still, you know, keep an eye on her and pay the big money to go see her concerts and buy her music and stuff. So, I mean, maybe the thing is that the people that followed her, started following her, continue to follow her, and they tend to have a bit more money maybe than the younger cohorts. It is amazing, though, actually. She really is not going away anytime soon.
Do you think there will be, now that the way that the industry is going, the entertainment industry is going, it's so different than it was when she started. Record sales don't seem to matter as much because people just aren't buying. The record labels are really having to make stars out of their roster as opposed to, you know, a big catalog of music. So do you think there will be another Madonna, or do you think Justin Bieber will, you know, be able to look back at 55 and sort of have done the same thing that she's done?
I wonder. It's very unclear what's going to happen. Like, who would have thought that, you know, like, I went to an event where there were bunches of CDs as giveaways to reward people for participating in focus groups, and a lot of the younger people participating said, well, we don't want your CDs. They walked away without them. Who would have possibly imagined that 5 or 8 or 10 years ago? Like, the thing is changing very quickly, and I suspect to Madonna's credit, she has adapted. And what you have to do now is you got to tour. You got to get on the road and stay on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people who do well now have discovered. It's extremely grueling. And now there's a whole, you know, subculture of people who take their families on the road. They basically live on the road. That seems to be the way that the music industry is headed. So we'll see. I mean, she's just going to get exhausted and she'll have to be replaced by some younger thing. I actually admire Gaga quite a lot, too.
Right.
We'll see what she's able to pull off.
Excellent. And thank you so much for your time. We're so happy to have you back on the show with us.
Okay, and I'll suggest that you get a seat in the Senate.
Thank you so much. That is our media personality, Anne Lagasse Dowson. Again, make sure to follow her on Twitter at A Lagasse Dowson.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
What is a fan's worth? We all know it's tough for artists to make money through the traditional routes, but there are several other revenue streams they depend on. We've entered the age where fans are seen more and more like customers, and artists need to find out how much they can make in the long run. To let us know what is going on with all of this, our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Patrick, thanks for hanging out.
Howdy, anytime.
We missed you last week, so thanks for making time with
us. I was down south, that's why I said howdy. So.
Very nice with your southern brethren. It's good. So this is actually pretty interesting. I you know, it's funny. I think we've all known probably that fans are customers. I know, you know, I have been. But it's weird to actually just sort of see fans equal customers, like in print. So what does that sort of mean, I guess, in the grand scheme?
Well, the thing is, first of all, it sounds disgusting to say it, right?
Right.
Like, you know, you hate the idea of, like, customers. What are you talking about? But basically, I mean, the thing you can do now, something that we've learned recently is that if you're sort of dealing with a subgroup of the industry, like a lot of bands, you know, they're big, they sell out places and stuff, and they do well for themselves. You know, I'm not talking about necessarily just the biggest bands, but there are a lot of bands that you don't really think about, but they're out there and they're making money. They're always on tour and they're making tons of dough. So it all comes down to what you do for your fans to keep them interested. The few fans that you have, keeping them engaged.
How can a band or an artist actually guarantee that they'll make money from their fans? Because, I mean, I suppose they can only tour so much. Although I know there's lots of bands that just sort of live on the road and that's life.
Yeah, which is brutal, right? Because you have all this dough, but, like, you you never get to go home, which is, I think, what people really want in reality. Like, people say, I'd love to be a big famous star touring and stuff, but you'd also like to go home to a fabulous house, wouldn't you, at some point?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, well, you know, the main thing is, I mean, you can never really guarantee it. But the thing is, all you can do is super serve the people who like you. The people who've shown interest in you, you can super serve them. And by that, I mean, a lot of people now are, I mean, you know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago, we talked about like One Direction mm-hmm. being so massive. And still, you know, you're like, can you name 3 songs? Like, I actually can't.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, the people who like them, I mean, they really built up their presence online. right? And it's a question of if the fans tweet to the band or the band's account or any of the members, you know, they might get a response back, or they send out lots of newsletters. They do a lot of stuff that is only directly marketed to the fans. It's not just about, you know, being on the radio every 2 seconds anymore like it used to be.
I wanted to bring in the idea of Vegas, because is it only certain people that can pull that off, Patrick? Like, you know, now Britney Spears is going to be commencing her residency over there, because she's sort of getting the best of both worlds where, yeah, she's not home in Los Angeles, but she's not far, and she's not touring all over Hell's Half Acre.
Right, right. And also, I think that I don't really think she can deal with touring, speaking of Britney for a second. So I think that's probably a good bet for her.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I think she might have another meltdown if she wound up, you know, going all over the place and doing interviews and doing all that sort of stuff. I think it's better for her to be stationed somewhere. And I think a lot of artists look at that. A lot of rock bands have been doing it as well. I mean, like Motley Crue did something like that. And I think Def Leppard is either doing one or has done one in Vegas as well.
Okay.
So a lot of people see that as a really good option. And it's kind of interesting because, I mean, you know, the people who go to Vegas are looking for entertainment, and there's all sorts of types, and they know the ages. They've studied the demographics of who goes there. So for somebody like Britney, it's probably just right. She's probably on the cutting edge of Vegas acts, as corny as that sounds.
Mm-hmm. And it was funny because I watched, I guess it was actually like a Where Are They Now thing or something, like on Oprah. And they did Carrot Top, the comedian. And he really has worked his magic, because like he has this residency that's been going on since like 2005 or 2008, and like he has this gorgeous house in Vegas, and he says that he's home in less than 20 minutes after coming off stage or something like 25 minutes from coming off stage.
It's crazy. Yeah, no, it's a good deal for him. He's the perfect guy for it.
Yeah, and he says that he loves that, you know, he has all these different people coming in from all over, and he's like, you know, I might have someone that would have seen me in Florida 10 years ago, and someone from seeing me in Texas, you know, 12 years ago, and now they're coming, you know, they're in Vegas and they're coming to see me because I'm here and they're here to party, and it's a good situation for everyone.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, it's a question of, like I said, about super serving the people who like you. I mean, you go to Vegas, and he's a very sort of, you know, he's a good example because he's a very sort of, I don't want to say middle of the road, but I mean, he kind of appeals to everybody. He did a lot of hits on The Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, I find him funny. You know, my mom used to find him funny. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's just one of those guys who you go like, okay, we'll check out Carrot Top. He's not too edgy. He's not too weird, you know, outside of his appearance.
Mm-hmm.
But his act sort of appeals to a lot of people. So being in Vegas is perfect because he's super serving the people who come there. They're in town and they're like, oh my God, this is perfect. I love Carrot Top. Or I mildly am amused by Carrot Top.
When it comes to this stuff too, Patrick, like, which artists or bands are doing this well and which bands and artists are not sort of embracing the fans equals customers, you know, equation?
Well, we talked about it. Here's the thing. I mean, part of the problem with that is newer bands are doing it and they're doing it well. That's the big answer.
Okay.
Newer bands are doing it well because they're able to. The problem is, like, people like Madonna will always say, like, you know, when she has a new album coming out, there's always an announcement. Madonna will be on Twitter for 25 minutes answering questions. It's like, nobody cares. What we want is Madonna walking down the street, going to get some groceries and tweeting a picture. That would blow people's minds. But she'll never do that because she's above it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the newer bands who don't really care and will put up stuff and will just say, hey, everybody, check out our new single. You can stream it on, you know, SoundCloud or on YouTube. Those are the people who are really benefiting from it because those people are really sticking by their fans. And if you go to their Twitter feed, there's always something. It's not just something when they have a product coming out. There's always something.
Is Bieber doing it right, or is he starting to go wrong? Like, because he obviously has, like, the most Twitter followers and, like, one of the most Facebook followings as well.
Yeah, it's kind of turned around for him because he's been sort of crowned the king of all of this stuff. So he sort of doesn't have to work too hard at it. Whatever he puts up, people like, because he's got all these millions of followers. So it's a little bit different for him because he's so big. But I'll give you an example. There's a company called Topspin. And what they do is they run media campaigns for artists. Like, a lot of times you'll see, oh, you know, Arcade Fire's new album is coming out, and there's a special website set up where you can stream 30-second snippets of the songs a week before they're released. So Topspin does stuff like that. If you're an artist, you go to them, and they say, don't worry, we're going to make some videos. We're going to make an online campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most lucrative things is actually trading people's email addresses for MP3s. Have you ever done that before?
No.
Yeah, like some bands have done it. I haven't seen it that much with the stuff I listen to, but I've seen a few times where a band will say, if you want our new single, go on our website, sign up for our newsletter, and you can download the single right away. So you do that. You have to sign in with an email address, right?
Yeah.
And they have found that the level of engagement goes way up when they get somebody's email address, because it kind of proves your dedication in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. So Topspin has been looking at all of this stuff since they've been building their business, and it's pretty interesting because speaking of Arcade Fire, they work with them, and they said that the average person who gives their email address to Arcade Fire is worth $6.26.
Wow.
Right? Okay. Because they're going to buy something. Like, it might be a single. This is all, of course, divided over the millions of fans.
Uh-huh.
But nonetheless, you got to think, right? One person, if you have, like, people say, oh, they have millions of fans. If you have, like, 5 million fans and you've made $6 from each of them, mm-hmm. just averaging out, that's pretty good, right?
Yes. Yes. Wow.
Yeah. So that's where a lot of this stuff comes from. And it's crazy. Do you know the band Sigur Rós?
Nope.
They're like an experimental, really strange, atmospheric music band.
Okay.
Obviously, they're not commercial at all.
Yeah.
And so they do a lot of that direct marketing type stuff. And these guys are saying that somebody who shares their email with Sigur Rós, they're worth at least $10.91.
My goodness. That's crazy.
That's the level of engagement. And do you know the band Umphrey McGee?
Nope.
See, they built up touring on the road and stuff. I mean, I couldn't name a song, but I've been hearing their name for about 10 years.
Okay.
One of their fans worth $33.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. And when
that's
it comes to
how
this,
much people care.
Yeah, and when it comes to all of this in the grand scheme of things, then, like, what are artists being advised to do to keep this, lucrative, keep the money coming in?
Just to be as engaged with your fans as possible, I'll give you an example. I mean, I'm a big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan, and if you register with their website, you get tons of stuff. You get tons of info about what they're doing, and they do a lot of limited release, like vinyl releases, and it's just little things that you would find interesting. And I got an email recently that everybody's doing like Black Friday specials, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they were doing a thing with a limited edition vinyl. Now, you didn't hear about that, but you're not as big a fan as I am, so I've heard about it because I've given them my email address. So there's more of a chance that obviously I might buy it.
That is, yeah, that's like me knowing, Janet's stuff. So
but that's why they have to do it, though. That's exactly what it is, because it's a big C right now. I mean, everybody says, you remember the we didn't talk about the YouTube awards.
No.
But did you see the numbers for the total viewers?
No.
It was like 220,000.
Wow.
Yeah, complete flop.
Yes.
Yeah, because I didn't really hear much about it before. I remember when they announced it, I said, oh, they're doing an award show. But the day of it, I mean, it wasn't. I was online. I was looking at stuff. I was looking at videos. And I didn't really – it didn't stick in my mind like, oh, my God, I have to check out the awards tonight. It just didn't have any traction. So 220,000 was like the peak.
Oh my goodness.
For watching that show.
Nothing.
So it just goes to show you that there's so much going on. I mean, people are doing so many different things that you can't depend on, well, we'll throw the video up on YouTube, somebody's going to see it. You have to get back to the people and remind them of what you have to offer.
Now, before I let you bounce, I just had a question actually sort of in the vein of what you just talked about with these YouTube awards, in the fact that I just read the other day that Katie Couric, who used to be, the host of the Today Show, and then she went to CBS News, and now she's got her own talk show. Apparently, she's jumping over next year. She will keep her show, or her syndicated show, so she'll still be on network TV, but she's going to be the global anchor for Yahoo.
It's brilliant.
Really, eh? Because, what's that going to
brilliant.
Mean, Patrick, do you think?
What's that?
What do you think it's going to mean in the grand scheme for her and for audience members? Like, because who would have thought like a huge anchor like her on Yahoo News?
Yeah, I know it sounds crazy, but I mean, here's the thing. I mean, everybody watches. I don't watch. I'm a big late night fan, right?
Okay.
Just the genre of late night television in general. Since I was a kid, I grew up watching the shows with my dad. I'd fall asleep midway through. So I've always been interested in late night, right? And, the guests are good, and sometimes you have bands on that you like, that sort of thing. But do I ever watch it now? No, never. I haven't watched a late night show, first of all, since I started working mornings.
Right.
But I haven't watched a late night show live in years. But clips, I see clips all the time. I'm constantly looking at, you always get the last night on late night. You can get those clips everywhere,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the best of Fallon, of Kimmel, of everybody. So here's the thing. If you actually make that leap and say, okay, you know what? Everybody watches these things online. How about we have somebody who's already well-known and they work solely online?
Yeah,
I mean, you think about
crazy.
It, it's brilliant, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, what about if they took Jimmy Fallon, like, off of his show, let's say, like, off of regular television, and he just did the show on the internet?
Yeah.
Maybe in the future he does the show for YouTube.
Right.
Well, why not? You can do it any time of day.
Yep.
But, I mean, it's taped in the afternoon anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But you can air it around the clock, and it's like, yeah, why not? I think it's the first really big step, and I'm actually surprised that it's Katie Couric and not Ryan Seacrest or somebody like that doing it. But nonetheless, more power to her, because this might wind up being massive. It might not, but it might wind up being massive.
I always appreciate her commitment to try new things. Like, she doesn't get, like, because she could have still been on the Today Show. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And she, you know, jumped, you know, 7 or 8 years ago already and has been doing all these other things. So good for her. So awesome. Patrick, thank you so much for this.
Anytime.
That is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Learn more about him on our website, kellyalexandershow.com, and follow him on Twitter at GetPatrick.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
How often do we tend to hold ourselves back when it comes to our own goals and ambitions? And how can we rekindle that ambition and spark to keep us going? Author Debbie Phillips joins us to talk about ways we so easily put ourselves down and how to dust ourselves off and begin again. Debbie, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. It's a joy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So I want to talk about this right off the hop. What does it mean to actually be a woman on fire?
Well, a woman on fire is full of passion, and she may know what she wants to do in life, or she may not be sure, but she's on her way. And so she gives herself the support she needs in order to make her dreams happen. And I don't know about you, Kelly, but I found myself so many times in my life just being full of life and going, I'm not sure what the next move is, but I'm going to just keep going. And we provide really circles of courage, I've been calling them lately, women who get together, support each other, cheer each other on. Because when that happens, I think that it makes it so much easier to be successful, to find our dreams, and to go for it.
That's awesome. I think it's great because it's always great when you have like a village to help pull yourself up.
Oh, boy. That is so the truth.
I wanted to ask you as well, is being a woman on fire, is that something actually easy to achieve, or is it like a process?
Well, it is a process. And what's nice about it is that we can be deeply satisfied at many points along the way. So it's not really so much the end goal. It really is being with other women for the journey and for everything. And one of the things we talk about at Women on Fire, we always go around the circle and we say, what are you on fire about, or what are you struggling with? Because most of us are in a transition at any given point. So things can be going great, but, you know, perhaps, a parent dies, or we're taking care of our children and our elderly parents at the same time. You know, there's always some transition going on in our lives while we're on our way to whatever goals we're trying to achieve. So the idea of Women on Fire was just to create these circles where women could feel safe and supported, loved and cheered on.
That is great. Can you tell me what are some of the common, I guess, I don't want to use the word mistakes, but I guess that's what I'll use when it comes to seeing, you know, women trying to handle everything, whether it's home or at the workplace and, you know, trying to have it all, if you will.
Right. Well, I think some of the common mistakes are just that when we're in the middle of that, we're really not thinking, we're just doing. And so when we're just doing, one, we're not taking care of ourselves. Usually we're the last ones to take care of ourselves, which is why I started Women on Fire, as a place where women can just be reminded of caring for ourselves first and then making other things happen, because we wear ourselves ragged. So that really is a way, you know, it's a mistake not to take care of ourselves. So many of us too have grown up thinking that taking care of ourselves was selfish. And unfortunately, you know, that's just unfortunate that that's out there, because that's woven into so many of us. And so big mistake not to take care of ourselves during a time like this. Big mistake to isolate ourselves. Sometimes friends and people we really get filled up from come last. And, you know, that's really a problem, because that fills our tanks when we're with people who support us, who cheer us on, who give us joy, who believe in us. And so isolating ourselves can be a mistake as well.
I wanted to speak to you about, you know, women in the workplace and how to support one another. Because, for example, I know that, you know, certain industries are fortunate to have a lot of women. Let's say just use like teachers for an example. However, mm-hmm. in other industries, I know it can be more male dominated. And sometimes I find in those industries, instead of women supporting each other, they actually, it can be more catty than ever. Mm-hmm. So what do you say mm-hmm. to that? Like, I know, for example, in the industry that I'm in, it can be male dominated. I'm fortunate that in the group of friends that I have as fellow female radio broadcasters, for the most part, I would say we're very supportive of one another, but I've seen it go mm-hmm. either way. So what do you say to that?
Yes. Well, what I say to them, and it's so interesting. Yesterday I was having lunch with a woman who's a very well-known radio and now TV broadcaster, and she was talking to me about some of that struggle. So I know, of course, exactly what you mean. And what I say is, it's really important to get your circle of support and your sisters in the workplace and support each other. And so I always urge people, do not, you know, one of the biggest detrimental things that any woman can do in the workplace is to gossip and talk about other people. And it's so critical that women get together and they support each other and create a force field in any industry, but especially when it's a male-dominated industry. You know, the guys have been doing it great for years. They really do support each other, and they help each other move along. And we have to do that for each other as women. We need to, that's where we can take a page out of their book. Got to stop being negative. Stop thinking that we're not going to, you know, that there's no hope. Join forces with other sisters, other men, you know, in the workplace. I've had some amazing male mentors who were really there for me. And, but keep yourself surrounded with positive, supportive people and be proactive about it. Invite people to lunch, invite people to coffee, do things if it's appropriate outside of the office that, you know, that create a stronger force. That's the single most important thing that we can do. Reach out to other people for support.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is author Debbie Phillips. Make sure to check out all our information on our website, womenonfire.com. Can we go back just a second, Debbie, to the part about taking care of yourself? Because I know it's so hard for sometimes women to either start doing it or even stay in the routine of doing it. So what would you suggest for women to even get a bit of a routine going?
Well, the first thing to do is actually put it in her calendar. And Kelly, I'm married, but I don't have children of my own. And I'm very busy. I still put it in my calendar. So that was a really great way. You know, if you're going to take a class, you're going to take a yoga class or, you know, any sort of thing that would lead to your good self-care, you know, a massage, a manicure, any of those things where you can just stop for a few minutes, take really good care of yourself, put it in your calendar. That's a great way to begin the habit of, and I'll tell you one of the things that I do, and I did it this morning when I got up. I'm traveling right now, but I always carry with me, and I always have by my bedside, inspirational books. So this morning I, you know, pulled a little loving kindness book that I have from Pema Chodron, and I just pulled it out, and I just took 5 minutes to read a little passage. So that's another form of self-care. You know, reading something inspiring to get your day started off on a positive note.
Can you talk to us about, quote unquote, having it all? Because I've heard sort of both sides of the argument where certain people have said, or certain women have said, you know, you can have it all. And then I've heard other ones say you can have it all, but not at the same time. So where do you fall in with that? And,
yeah.
and you know, because I know for myself, I have tons of goals. And I probably mm-hmm. tell myself on a daily basis, I wish there was mm-hmm. like five of me, because I have many interests and like I can't seem to get it all done. And I'm not even talking yet about like having my own nuclear family, if you will. This is just career stuff. So how do women put it all together?
Yep. Well, I fall into the latter category, which is, you know, we can have it all or mostly all, but it's probably not going to happen at the same time, nor would we want it. You know, think about the most fabulous meal that you could put together with every one of your favorite things. You know, would you want to gorge yourself on absolutely everything at once?
Right.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I think about our lives. I was thinking about it this morning already. I was thinking how happy I am. And I have had recently in my life, I had 4 people in 8 weeks die. And 2 of them were in my family, my brother and his wife. And so obviously, you know, I'm in a period where I'm grieving, and but I was thinking, like, you know, aside from Steve and Gabby's death and the other two people who died, I was like, you know, I'm really happy. I'm really satisfied. Could I be happier? Yes. But, you know, I'm balancing it with what's going on in my life with the grieving. And I was like, okay, but overall, you know, I'm pretty happy. And I think that's the place we want to stay. You know, are we happy? Are we tending? I love what you said, Kelly, about goals. And if you had to ask me one question about what I think is the most important thing in the world, it is writing down your goals. Imagining how you want your life to be and writing down your goals, not thinking your goals in your head, which most people go, oh yeah, I've got my goals in my head. No, you have to write down your goals. That's what makes them come true, because they're solid. They're on a piece of paper. You can certainly change them up, but that's really important, because you know that you can't slip and slide when you've got your goals written down, and somehow magically they start to happen when they're written down.
What prevents women from being happy and feeling empowered? What gets in the way?
Well, what gets in the way are really the small things. And so it's, you know, it's withholding. It's being withholding of those selves. It's being small. It's being petty sometimes. It's being negative. And so all these things that get you further, farther, faster, which is being positive. You know, there's all kinds of studies. When you're positive, your goals happen. When you're positive, you're happier. When you're positive, you live longer. And, you know, of course, none of us can be positive 100% of the time. But you know what? We can probably be positive 75 to 90% of the time. And that's going, you know, to make for a healthier, happier life. So, you know, so I also think not reaching out, being a victim, you know, feeling like you're always a victim, X, Y, and Z is always happening to me. You know, those are the kinds of things that hold us back. We have to be proactive. We are in charge of our lives. We're the president of our life. We're the CEO of our life. And we deserve to live it to its fullest. And we're in charge of that. We're doing the strategy for that. So it's extremely important, the mindset of being positive, being connected with other people, being joyful that other people are successful. You know, my husband, Rob Berkeley, and I have a program called Vision Day. People come from all over the world to spend a day crafting a strategic plan for their life or their business or their life and business. And one of the things that often happens is people come and they're dissatisfied in a way. And they're like, well, you know, my best friend, you know, we started out at the same time. And you know, he makes twice the amount of money I make. And Rob and I always say, you know, unhappy people compare themselves to other people. Happy people compare themselves to their own goals. So I would imagine, Kelly, that you're probably a pretty happy person, because I know you're really motivated. I know you have lots of goals. I know you've got lots of activities. You've got this amazing, project. And you're probably comparing, you know, to your own, you know, you've got lots of goals going. So you've got lots to compare your own progress with, rather than, oh my gosh, you know, I don't have the Martha Stewart show, you know, oh my goodness, Martha Stewart's, you know, she's got her own radio show and she's ahead of me. You know, that's just wasted energy. Happy people compare themselves to their own goals.
That's awesome. And how do you tell women or help them get back on track and feeling inspired again, especially because, you know, I know we'll use myself as an example, just with this show alone, in the attempt to try to get it out to more people and try to get it picked up by certain stations and all that kind of stuff, I've had some success, and then other times I have not had success, and it's almost like it's, you know, it's disappointing, especially if you can see that it should be there or what have you. So if you've been battered a few times, like, how do you change your mindset?
Well, I'm going to tell you a quick little story. I interviewed Vanessa Williams. Do you remember her? You know, she's a very famous actress. Yep.
Love her.
And she's fantastic. And you know, she's done so much from film to television shows to Broadway. She's just enormously accomplished. And I was interviewing her, and she just, her show had just been canceled. And what was amazing was when I asked her about it, she goes, oh, I always just go next. And I thought that was amazing because, just like you said, you know, we get battered from our losses. And I think it's really important that every single time we have a loss or we get battered, that we just go next. Because, Kelly, what you're doing, you know, there are 7 billion people in the world. Half of them are women. And I'm assuming that, you know, women is are your audience. And you're just looking for your 3.5 billion, you know, women, and you will find them. And so you know, I would just always recommend that mindset of, I'm disappointed, that didn't work out, what's next?
Fantastic. Debbie, how can people, you know, get a hold of you if they have any questions or want some more tips?
Oh, absolutely. They can sign up for our weekly inspiring blog post, which is called The Spark. And all they have to do is go to womenonfire.com. They can get a hold of us through there and sign up for The Spark. And it's free. And every week we provide inspiration, strategies, and support so that you can live your best life.
Fantastic. Debbie, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, Kelly, this was really wonderful, and good luck with everything. And I can't wait to see what's next for you. I know lots of good things.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. That was author of Woman on Fire, Debbie Phillips. Again, for more information, make sure to check out her website, womenonfire.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We are looking so forward to talking to lead singer of 11 Past One. Daniel, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, what's up? Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you, and it's great to, you know, to have such an awesome Canadian talent come talk to us on the show. First of all, for fans
you.
Who might not know a lot about you, because we have a lot of people that are listening actually overseas right now, so can you tell us where you guys are based out of and how you came together as a group?
Okay, well, we are based right now out of basically Toronto, I guess you could say, just a little bit outside of Toronto called Bowmanville. Most of us live in Bowmanville. It's a small town. Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Well, basically, you know, I got a little brother in the band. He plays guitar. It's Steven. And one of his best friends that he met in high school, actually, Steve-O, the drummer.
Okay.
Us three started the band back in, like, 2007.
Okay.
And we went through a few member changes and stuff, and about a year ago, we added our last member, and Kyle and Dan, they're here to stay for sure. So that's who make up. Like, Dan is from New Brunswick, actually, in New Brunswick, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle is from Oshawa, which is just basically like a town over from us.
Okay. And how has it been? Because 2007, that's actually a long time for a band, if you will. Like, a lot of the bands that I interview, you know, have only just sort of formed, or that's been maybe 2 or 3 years. So passion must be driving you if you've managed to stay together this long.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you know what you want to do in life, there's only one thing you want to do. You're not going to give up on it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. And can you describe your, I guess, flavor or sound, if you will? Because I know a lot of people always want to make that assumption for you. But how do you describe 11 Past One?
I'm just going to say, obviously, we're pop, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
we play pop music. I think it's, like, basically pretty straightforward.
Okay. Do you ever get upset when people sometimes use the word pop and sort of say it as almost like a negative thing, or, oh, they're just a pop band? Like, does that affect you or bother you, or you don't care?
I mean, it's not going to upset me, but, like, I think when people do say stuff like that, I feel like maybe it's a little bit, like, I don't know. It's like, it's almost like they don't really know what they're talking about, because
mm-hmm.
if you have a preference of music, it doesn't really matter. Like, that's your preference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So don't bash, like, other genres and stuff like that. That's what I'd say.
Right. Can you talk to us as well about the single, Tonight's the Night? It's the latest one. You know, what was the inspiration behind it? And did you feel really, like, strong about, you know, saying, hey, this is a song that we want to put out?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we felt strong enough to put it out. And it's basically just a feel-good song, living for the moment. And I guess it kind of tells the story. Starts off with, you know, boy meets girl. It's C-O-M-E, girl, just a little bit closer and stuff. So you just meet each other and, you know, tonight's the night, have a good time, just, yeah, living for the moment, basically, I guess.
And talk to us about, you know, your single, The World Is Ours. Was it, like, you know, a really good feeling to know that lots of radio stations picked it up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, geez, it's such a huge, huge blessing, like, for all the support that we had, especially for that song, yeah, for sure.
And what are you guys working on now? Is, like, an album going to come out?
Yeah, right now we're working on our album, well, our first EP with Warner Canada, and it's going to be at least a 6-song EP, and we're working on that now. We were just in Vancouver writing actually last week, so we're in the studio writing, and hopefully we'll be releasing it in the new year, like early new year.
Is there an artist or a producer that you or the band would love to work with, like that you feel would really be, you know, an influence and like a huge boost to what you guys are producing?
Yeah, I mean, producer-wise, there's tons out there, but I think a lot of us really want to work with a guy named Max Martin.
Yep.
And Dr. Luke.
Yep.
They're a real good team. They're awesome.
So that would require you guys going overseas, maybe?
Yeah, I think Sweden or something.
Yeah, I think so. So would you, like, have you reached out to him or them, or is that, like a goal for down the line a little bit?
I think it's probably a goal down the line because, you know, they're doing, like, all the Katy Perry's of the world
right.
and stuff like that, so they're pretty booked. I think they're booked, like, 2 years in advance.
Wow, that's crazy. So, is there another band, Daniel, that you really admire in Canada? Like, what do you feel about the Canadian pop scene? Is there another band that sort of sticks out
to you? Yeah, I mean, I really admire Headley, I would say, for Canadian pop band,
okay.
for sure.
Great.
Yeah.
What do you feel about the scene in and of itself? Like, do you find that a lot of bands are very supportive of each other, or is it really competitive as you sort of tour across Canada?
Usually, I think the bands are very supportive of each other. Like, obviously, you get the odd, like, you know, douchebags.
Right.
But, you know, usually everybody's there to do the same thing, right? Everybody's there to play music, you know, to share music and play music. So usually, you know, we run into bands when we're touring that are nice and support each other, you know.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Daniel, lead singer of 11 Past One. Make sure to learn all about them on their website, 11pastonemusic.com. Daniel, can you talk to us a little bit about social media? How important is it for you guys as a band, you know, to keep getting the word out? Does social media like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, does it help you get more fans, do you find, and also have a good connection with fans and new fans?
Yeah, it's extremely important to us. All forms of social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the whole nine yards. Like, it's really, we try to, you know, we try to talk to everybody ourselves. We tweet every day. We talk to people as much as we can. And I think it is a huge role. Like, it's a really big, important role, especially in today's day and age, right? In this society, it plays a huge role in your success, for sure.
Are there any plans, Daniel, for you guys to either head to the States or head overseas to break new markets? Like, is that the big goal at some point?
Yeah, most definitely, for sure. Once this album is done, that's the goal.
Okay.
We just want to have an album ready to go, you know, and not just singles, in order to venture off overseas and stuff like that.
And do you think you'll go overseas first, or do you think you'll try America?
I think we might try and tackle them at the same time, but if not, we'll just have to pick one.
Gotcha. Perfect. Daniel, you've been awesome. Thank you so much for hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is Daniel, lead singer of 11 Past One. Again, get all their information on their website, 11pastonemusic.com.
What's up? This is Daniel, and you're hanging out with me on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Riding a wave, chasing the sun. Only gets better when you're with someone. Someone that you love who takes your breath away. We're wild and we're young, we're living for today. Tell me where you come from. You look like your home's gone. I can tell you need someone today. Get into the rhythm. Forget all your problems. Why not let the waves wash them all away? Ooh, I know you came for the weekend. But girl, there's no way I'm leaving. This is where it begins. Ooh, feels like we're stars in a movie. I'm Romeo, you're my Juliet.
Is ours. let's get lost in the firelight. There's only us tonight. We can talk from dusk.
Thank you going out to my guests this week, Anne Lagasse Dowson, Patrick Charles, Debbie Phillips, and 11 Past One. Here's your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Ralph Marston. At every opportunity, go a little beyond what you know you can do. Soon you will confidently know you can do anything you choose. Thank you so much for hanging out on the show. As always, any comments or questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. And make sure to follow us on our social media, on Twitter at KAlexandershow, on Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and of course on YouTube, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.